Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
And we also have a special guest with us.
A
super special guest. A magical special guest. That was the voice of Craig. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, thanks, guys.
You're otherwise known as the Chief Unicorn.
That's me, yeah, for my sins. Chief Unicorn.
Of the Purple Sparkly Unicorns.
Yeah.
Of which we're going to be talking about quite a lot in this podcast, because only a few days ago we finished a tournament. The first Purple Sparkly two-day Age of Sigmar tournament.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, wasn't it?
Good, that's nice to hear.
It's all right. as you'll learn later on in the podcast, it could have gone better for me, but... And now, it was really good. But before we get to our little feature for this week's podcast, we have got the news to get through, a hobby update, and we also have a brand new top three this week, Matt.
We do. We want to know your top three holiday destinations within Warhammer Worlds.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's not many places you actually want to go and visit, but yeah.
Speak for yourself. There's some places that I'd like
Stephen
to...
Stephen Blight. Well,
yeah. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Awesome.
Cool. We'll also read out your top picks as well, of which I think we've had quite a few.
Yeah, it's been a successful week.
You successfully remembered to post it this week. Because I forgot again. So I'm glad you remembered. We should have like a reminder or something, like tweet deck. Because we're just like, you need to send a top three. That'd be a good idea. Before we get into all of that, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby for the past week since the last podcast. So do you want to start us off, Matt?
Yeah, let's go for it. So we have been looking to start a bit of a Blood Bowl league. So over the last week, I have been painting up West Hamburgers, my halfling Blood Bowl team. So they're nearly done. I've converted up two tree men from Kerenoth Hunters, which worked really well. If you use like one of the archer hands and swap out one of the other hands, you kind of get a nice throwing the ball thing.
They look quite dynamic.
One of them looks
as well.
Like there's kicking. So yeah, they worked really well for that. I'm glad I picked them up rather than the Lord of the Rings Ents. So I need to get them sprayed and painted up. And I have got sitting on my desk a Slaves to Darkness Start Collecting box as well. So I'm going to get each of the warbands from Warcry, throw in a Start Collecting, and a couple of other characters, and it's pretty much 2,000 points. Not the most competitive list, but it's something fun.
Yeah, I think that was pretty cool. And you've got Archeon that can always lead them as well.
Yeah, he's not a Slave to Darkness.
Oh yeah, of course he's not. We went through this, didn't
we? We did.
Yeah. He will be soon enough, though.
I'm sure he will be.
All right. Jay, what have you been up to?
So this week's been a bit quieter than normal because we've finished the tournament. So I've been just getting my Wood Elves ready for the Blood Bowl League. So I've put them together. I've done a test model here. I've got with me like an autumn scheme that I've been working on. It didn't take that long to paint, actually, a few hours. So I reckon I can probably get the whole team done in the next week or two. That's the plan anyway. Aside from that, the rest of my hobby time has been spent, for the first time in ages, writing 40k army lists.
Ooh, there's a reason for that.
There's a reason for that, yes. Trying to remember what all the detachments were and all that sort of thing. So it's been good.
Yeah, cool. Did you use contrast for that?
I didn't use contrast. No, this was traditional. So after the contrast challenge we did, I did enjoy using the contrast paints, but I think I preferred the traditional method of painting. I'm not sure there's many bits on here that would be suited for contrast, actually. Perhaps the hair. So I think I will use contrast as and when I feel it's appropriate.
Most important question, what's the team called?
The Wild Bodkins.
Wild Bodkins, amazing.
Yeah. I've got a tree man as well in the team. I've decided to put the second war dancer on the bench and use a tree man for giggles. And it's not a Games Workshop tree man though, so I might have to do a conversion if we ever get to
controversial.
Do you think we'll get that good that we'll go to a Blood Bowl tournament?
I
can't remember how you play it. I even took the rule book with me to work today to read through it, and I was like, yeah, none of this is going in.
I installed it on Steam. Blood Bowl 2, is it Blood Bowl 2 Chaos Edition or something like that?
Yeah.
If you want to get into Blood Bowl, that's a really good way of getting into it, I think, because you can mess around with all the teams. It uses the same rule set as the tabletop game.
Yeah, it is very good. They just like to cheat you a lot, the game.
Oh yeah, the AI will cheat, but you can get a feel for the mechanics. It shows you the dice rolls, it shows you the probabilities of making certain moves and whatnot. So I find it's a really good tool for just, you know, if you're not that used to the rules, have a game on that.
I think I only ever actually played that once on Xbox One, but it's ages ago.
Yeah, it's a shame it's not cross-platform, because that would be brill, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm playing Halfling, so one touchdown over the whole tournament, I'd be happy.
One touchdown in the league.
Yeah.
Hey, also, Dave, you might not come bottom. I might have come
bottom. Hey, no spoilers. It's a massive spoiler. Especially if you're on our Twitter anyway.
Yeah.
Craig, have you been doing anything in the hobby for the last 7 days?
I have been making scenery for our next upcoming tournament, which we were going to discuss a bit later on, so I won't give any spoilers away about what it is. But yeah, I've been putting scenery together and gluing and painting and getting ready, and I'm having another day next week when I'm doing even more on it with all my friends coming around to the house, and that's about all my hobby really, apart from running a tournament.
You also mentioned at the tournament that you had been painting something.
Yeah, I have been slowly painting some Melusai for my Daughter's Cane, thank you. Sorry, I've been up very early this morning. My Daughter's Cane army, yes, I've painted, sprayed and based 15 of them, and
amazing.
Started to get some paint on them, so we'll see how.
I love those models.
These are the snake elves, aren't they?
Yeah. And the good ones with combat weapons, not the
rubbish ones with bows.
Yes.
It's actually worth pointing, because we do like to sneak a little plug in for the old YouTube channel, that you actually appear on our YouTube channel with your Daughters of Cain.
Yeah, we got through a turn maybe until you battered me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That was against your Vorgraph list, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. If you'd have made the charge, you'd have battered them, but unfortunately you failed and then got beaten to death.
Yeah.
But with that one wound.
Yeah, that one by the, sneaky wound by the cauldron. Yeah.
Ouch. I've also had quite a quiet week once I've finished the Stonecast. We obviously had the tournament. All I've been doing since then is studying a new battle tome that I picked up.
Studying
a new battle tome. So I've gone and treated myself to the Blades of Khorne battle tome.
Yeah, good book.
So I've been reading that and making lots of lists, and it's really cool. And I played a Khorne army during the during the event as well, which further inspired me.
That was a Khorne army, wasn't it?
That was a Khorne army, and I've had an itch for Khorne for quite a while, but I never committed.
See, I'm surprised you haven't gone with your Skaven yet. You've been on about Skaven for ages.
I don't know what I'm waiting for.
All roads lead to Khorne.
Oh, yeah. I will build a Skaven army, but I think I'm waiting for some moment, and I don't know what moment that is. I don't know. I don't know, but I haven't started yet. So I'm going to do Khorne first. So,
okay.
So that's the plan. So I built and painted a Skulltaker,
yeah,
though, actually.
And Khorne, I think, they'd be a good candidate for contrast.
Yeah, they were, although the Flesh Terror Red didn't have quite the effect I was hoping for. He still looks okay, but I was expecting it to, I don't know what I was expecting.
Isn't there a Blood Red?
Yeah, there's two Angels Red.
Two Red. Yeah, I wanted it darker than that. So, Grey Seer and then Flesh Terrors, but we'll see how it looks.
What about mixing a bit of the Black Templar into it?
Yeah, maybe.
Or brown into it?
Maybe. I'm not very experimental in my opinion, so maybe I need to be.
You could do like black skin, use the Black Templar with glowing red eyes.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I want to say.
I've seen really good white Bloodletters and Bloodthirsters, they look cool.
Nah, I'm saying traditional red, that's how it is for me. Awesome. That rounds up our intro to this week's podcast. As I mentioned, we've got the tournament to talk about. We've also got the top three. But in the next segment, we'll be talking about this week's news. Matt has just reliably informed me that there is quite a bit of news this week.
There is. There's some nerdy stats in here as well. But my day job, I look at stats and financials and Games Workshop filed there so just yesterday. So we'll be looking into them as well, because there's some interesting bits in there.
Yeah, some potential hints for the future.
Oh, some definite hints for the future.
Definite hints for the future.
But yeah, well, first we've got the pre-order. So on Saturday, we've got pretty much the rest of the Warcry range up for pre-order, which is really cool, because I was a bit concerned, like with previous games they've done, like Underworlds, they try and drag it out over a year and it loses the momentum. They're going all in with week two. The Unmade, the Corvus Cabal and the Splintered Fang are all up for pre-order. They're all €40 each, which is about £30, I think.
Today it is. Tomorrow it might not be.
There's also the Shattered Storm Vault, which has got 5 sprues of the new Storm Vault scenery.
Including the Griffhounds.
Yeah, it looks like you get the Griffhounds, you get the kind of small plinth, 2 of the smaller temples and some bridges. So that's a really good set to kind of go with the big I think it's like £95 the all in big box. Yep. So gonna pick up one of them. Let's face it, gonna pick up all of this stuff because Warcry looks ace. Obviously, your cards to use it in games of Warcry as well, but for, you know, for Sigmar scenery, it's really handy as well.
Yeah.
So that'll be about £60 ish. I think it's £55 the other set, so that kind of ballpark. We've also got some goodies for Necromunda. The Palanite Enforcers.
I cannot wait for I'm not even a Necromunda fan, but I cannot wait for these guys.
Yeah, these are basically the cops.
Yeah.
They can't be doing with all these gangs kicking off down in the Underhive, so they go down there with their bolt guns and sort them out.
Yeah, that's the way, isn't it? Police always going in heavy-handed.
Yeah, ruining everybody's fun.
Where the gangs are kind of restricted by the black market and what gear they can get, you can give these guys whatever you want. If you want a sniper, you can take a sniper. If you want a guy with a big dock-off gun, you can give him that.
They've got intercessor helmets.
Yeah, they're pretty nails. Now, I imagine you might have a small kind of warband at the start of a campaign compared to everyone else, but, you know, you're wearing armour and you've got decent weapons, so you've got an advantage there.
Yeah, I can't argue with
that. These are potential inquisitorial
material.
Yeah.
For when my Codex Imperial Agents come.
Where the Arbites kind of dealt with Imperium kind of problems, they wouldn't bother themselves with, like, gang disputes on a planet, so these are pretty much the police force on the individual planet.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that they wouldn't be, you know, drafted up if a, I don't know, Gene Silico Uprising happened or something, so... You know, we could see 40k rules for them, you never know.
That'd be cool.
Alongside these, there's going to be some gang tactics cards and some dice. There's also the Book of Judgment, which sounds just pretty ominous, but that's got their rules in, plus a campaign system, where they kind of go in and break up the gangs on the planet. Or try to break up the gangs on the planet. And then also there's three new card decks coming out with that. Intrigues and Rackets, which add more kind of random events to your games. There's some stat cards for all of the bounty hunters, which is handy if you do a bounty hunter gang. And there are underdog cards. So these are ways of equalising a campaign. If, say, if, I don't know, Jay's got the enforcers and he's got a much higher warband rating than everyone else, they can pull some of these underdog cards to try and level the playing field.
Like Blood Bowl.
Like Blood Bowl, which is pretty cool. We've got two lots of reveals coming up this week as well. So tomorrow at Gen Con, at 3 p.m. UK time, we have a reveal. We don't know what it is. If I was a gambling man, since it's a big game show, I'd say probably the proper reveal of Warhammer Underworld Season 3.
So we might see both the starter warbands.
We may well do.
That could be quite exciting for you, Jay, because you're positive these are war dancers.
I think this is a new... Myself, I suspect this will be a new direction for Wanderers, Wood Elves. I don't think these are going to be the normal Wanderers that are currently in the General's Handbook. I don't know, could be wrong, but from the silhouettes we've seen, I'm very excited about this. They look very war dancery, and there's no war dancers yet in the Wanderers lists. So I think it's set in the Realm of Beasts, isn't it, Underworld Season 3?
Yeah, they've escaped the, what's it called?
Shades.
Shattered City or whatever it's...
Shadespire.
Shadespire, yeah. So they've escaped that and they've come through a realm gate into a mountain in the Realm of Beasts.
Yeah, so in the silhouette we've seen, there's definitely a centaur-looking creature there. I think that might be part of the Wood Elf range.
Well, it could be. I thought it was a centaur at first, but looking back at it, it's a bit more graceful, so it could be, yeah.
So am I the only one around this table that thinks it could be a Stormcast centaur?
I mean, it could be a purple sparkly unicorn.
Yeah, you never know.
So that's cool. And then on Saturday, we've got the biggest ever game of 40k at Warhammer World. And after it, they've got a reveal at 9 p.m, which, let's face it, is Primaris Marines, isn't it? Because I've been teasing it on Twitter the last few days.
Yeah, the Primaris Lieutenant account.
I love that account.
That was a new Lieutenant model, and in the background you could definitely see a new Dreadnought, a new tank, some new troops. That Dreadnought looked like it had two antennas. Did anybody else notice that?
I didn't look too close at the antennas, Dave.
Yeah, I did. I was checking out those antennas.
Definitely they, got a harness like the Dreadnought.
I think it's going to be some kind of scout Dreadnought, isn't it?
Yeah, like the
Reavers. Being very focused on Vanguard.
Those infantry as well, they look like they run bigger bases, like the 32mm base, so I'm wondering whether they're some sort of Terminator-esque type.
Okay, that'd be interesting.
Infantry model.
Also worth noting at this point, sorry Matt, it might already be on your page, I'm not sure, they've released rules to use the new variant of the... tank, of which I can't remember the name of, the Repulsor, but not the Repulsor, the other one.
The new one.
So you can use it in Death Watch, Space Wolves, Blood Angels.
Is it an execution or something?
Yeah, I think, a feeling that was just an oversight and probably gets addressed in the, let's face it, upcoming book.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's cool. So that's all the kind of new release stuff. But like I said, yesterday, I think it was, Games Workshop published their 2019 financials. And it is a record year for them, the third in a row. So, you know, it's almost as if, like, interacting with your community and putting out awesome products and teasers and stuff that people actually want actually pays off.
Who'd have thought, eh?
Funny that, isn't it?
It was interesting seeing all the business analysts on Twitter, you know, talking about Games Workshop, and they were saying, like, how many companies can say, like, man, we're doing awesome. We're, like, on an awesome trend.
Yeah, like everyone else has kind of gone to pot and they're like, the share price has gone up ridiculous. If you bought shares like, you know, 5 years ago in Games Workshop, they'd be worth a fortune now.
In the far future of the 21st millennium, there is Brexit and Games Workshop.
And Games Workshop, yeah, we're sailing through fine. So I'm not going to bore you too much with the details, but there's a few key points that I thought, you know, interesting to us hobby types. So obviously the one about their key brand is Warhammer. We've seen that with the rebrand. Everything's kind of Warhammer branded now rather than Games Workshop. They picked out their three core games as Age of Sigmar, Warhammer 40,000 and Horus Heresy, which is interesting that's still in there. So hopefully it gets some love, because it is a cool game. Mm-hmm. It just needs a bit of a 40k overhaul, I reckon.
Yeah. 8th edition rules!
Yeah, if they did that, a big plastic box set with 8th edition rules, people would be all in on Heresy. It's just a bit of a slog playing a game of it now compared to Sigmar and 40k, well, isn't it?
I can't fit the two rule sets in my head. Like, it's Age of Sigmar, 8th edition 40k, and then I can't remember now how to figure out what a Blizzard Skill 2 is. Yeah. You still off by heart.
They are also exploring animation, live action, and more. Now, this is really exciting. Mm.
We already know about Eisenhorn being on the way, yeah. A live action series.
Yeah.
Animation is an interesting one because there are lots of fan stuff online. There Some are. Of them are far better than others. For example, is it Brothers, is it called? The recent Marine one with Cadians.
Yeah.
That's really good. So, yeah, there's loads of scope to make awesome. I'd love to see, like, a Japanese animation style Warhammer.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mm.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
You could do, like a short, Joe, you know, like the Matrix one, Animatrix.
Mm.
The Halo Legends.
They went
out
to all the main, like, anime studios and each made their own thing.
And also, let's be honest, if they wanted to aim for a younger audience, the art from Warhammer Adventures,
yeah,
that's perfectly ready for a Saturday morning kids cartoon, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They... Kids cartoon, Dave.
Yeah, well, they will be watching as well.
They've invested $10.5 million in the studio and $3.3 million on new miniature tooling equipment, doubling their current capacity. You think there's a lot of kits coming out now, they've just doubled the capacity, and that should all be complete August 2019, to pump out all of the plastic kits in the world.
Awesome.
They've always been limited with the kind of the factory there, and they've expanded all that, and yeah, it's all
still based in Nottingham.
Still based in Nottingham. Yeah. They've got a new warehouse, I think it's like 5 miles away from the current one, where all the stock's going to live, and then I think all the tooling and moulds and stuff going to live at, Warhammer World. So yeah, definitely. There's been some speculation that perhaps that implies there'll be a bits service back. I don't think so. I think it's just they're creating so many plastic kits. They've got, you know, they're massive heavy moulds, aren't they, for doing these. They just need somewhere to store them, as well as all their stock.
Definitely. Yeah.
It would be cool if they brought the bits service back.
It would be.
Hopefully this will get around all the issues they had with Loom Curse and other battle boxes where maybe they were limited by space.
Yeah,
well, definitely. If they're doubling it, that's a lot of stuff they can produce. And, you know, that's eaten to the sales. You know, they could have sold double the amount of Loom Curse boxes they did. Yeah. And what's the other one? Carrion Empire.
Yeah,
I'm sure loads of people would pick up, you know, 5 boxes of that right now if it was available.
Wouldn't you, Dave?
Yeah, I would. Maybe that's what I'm waiting for my Skaven, for that to come back around.
One of the key goals for the next year is focus on Warhammer on the small screen and the big screen.
Ooh.
Warhammer movies? Oh, yes. The kind of debut thing we're going to see from this spin-off is Angels of Death, an animated series about Blood Angels. Distribution's unclear, but it's possibly going to launch on Warhammer TV, followed by some streaming service, which, let's face it, is probably Netflix, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Or Amazon Prime. I mean, Amazon Prime snapped up Lord of the Rings.
Well, interestingly, Amazon own Twitch, and obviously there's the Warhammer TV lives via Twitch. That might be the link there.
Yeah, I forgot about Angels of Death, actually. You were talking about all this media stuff. Yeah.
They have just created a new department within Games Workshop, Warhammer Storyforge, who develop scripts and stories for media. So they've got in-house writers, so they've got complete control of the IP, Black Library guys doing the stories and the script pictures. So I think they want They want to do this with as much control as possible, which I guess makes sense, really.
I hope they've looked at video games as the perfect example of how to do that kind of media wrong. Like, you take an excellent video game series that could almost write itself into a film and then ruin it.
Well, it sounds like they're going to have much more of a kind of strong hand on kind of the background and the design and the story, rather than someone taking something that's vaguely Warhammer, slap the name on it, and it's really got nothing to do with it at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's exciting. Obviously, this is just in its like initial stages. It's a long way out. Interestingly, they're looking to reduce packaging in Games Workshop products as well. They don't really have that much packaging,
and it is cardboard.
Yeah.
But then they could get rid of the plastic around the outside of it.
Yeah.
Cling film. Like,
yeah.
And blister packs. I mean, they're moving away to boxes for them now anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe. Interestingly, the more recent Lord of the Rings releases are in boxes rather than blisters as well. So.
Yeah, I went to buy my Skull Taker from GW the other weekend, I was like looking through all the blisters and I was like, oh, they've not got him. Didn't realise he was in a box, just like sat there, so I was like, yes, buy him.
Yeah, and this record year, it's worth noting, goes up to 2nd of June 2019, so this doesn't include all the sales they've made from Contrast.
Wow.
So next year, presumably, is going to be another record year.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, it's going well for Games Workshop. All the staff got a share of a massive bonus payout as well, which is cool.
They've done that before, I think, haven't they?
Yeah.
And with that little bit of financial news there by our financial expert Matt, I think that rounds up our news segment. I don't think there's anything else to add, is there?
No, we'll have more in the week, so next time I'm sure we'll have some awesome news.
And we'll also be able to talk about Warcry as well.
Yeah.
Right, we shall take a pause here and we'll be coming back with some tournament chatter as we discussed last weekend's Age of Sigmar tournament. We all took part in the Age of Sigmar tournament held at Williston
Masonic.
Masonic, that's the word I couldn't say. Hall last weekend, hosted by the Purple Sparkly Unicorns.
Yeah.
How about you give us a bit of a background on the event before we talk about the event itself?
So, this is our fifth event, but it's our first two-day event. We've been to loads of tournaments between like the three main organisers. Four main organisers, I should say. we've been to Games Workshops once, we've been to South Coast GT, you know, so we've got a lot of tournament experience, I think. And we just wanted to do our own two-day event, and we just wanted to be really friendly, but also everyone have a really good time and just have some good games of Warhammer, really. That was the premise behind it.
And I think some really good games of Warhammer were had.
It was really good. Yeah, it was, you know, really enjoyable. I prefer the 2 day rather than the 1 day because you can obviously have a full size game.
Absolutely.
You've got a bit more breathing space between games, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely.
It was nice because we've had quite a few thousand point games recently, haven't we?
Yeah.
And it did feel good to have a proper army.
Yeah.
Having a game with a proper force.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So shall we run through our games? How we got on. And then towards the end, we can just sort of talk about the event in as a whole thing, and what we took away from it. So, Matt, do you want to start us with your game one?
Yeah. So I was playing Gaz and his gorgeous Trogoth army. I think he won best painted, didn't he?
Yeah, it did. Won best painted by a massive landslide.
Yeah.
Absolute
victory. It was ace. Unfortunately for him, he got tabled by Idoneth by like turn three. But it was a fun game. It was, I suppose, an easier draw for me than maybe your first draw, Dave. But no, it was really good. Enjoyed it. It was fun to see the Gloom Spite because I've always fancied doing a Trogoth army myself. Though they don't seem super powerful.
Yeah, I think his list wasn't you know, high-tuned, ready for smashing face. I think he'd come more to win the painting and have some good games, which... You know, you take away from your tournament what you want to take away from it, I suppose. He said to me when I played him that there's loads of things he could have changed in the list, but that's what he wanted to do. We wanted to come for painting. He had a display board for it. It was good stuff.
Yeah, that was a gorgeous display board.
That was one thing I thought about the tournament as well. There were quite a few players there, I think, that were quite, not professional tournament players, but they had tuned tournament lists.
Yeah.
But there was also quite a lot of players there that I thought just brought friendly lists and quite thematic lists. So there's something for everyone.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like it was a very high pressure event, even though there were people there who had a lot of experience.
Because I know you were a bit concerned, Jay, weren't you, that it was going to be more like GT Super Series.
Yeah, which I knew I wouldn't enjoy. But and I mean, I had a couple of games against some really really tough opponents, and I really enjoyed it. And I'm not. I prefer the more casual side of Age of Sigmar to the competitive side, but I love this tournament. That was a positive for me from the whole thing.
Well, speaking of competitive games, I was against some guy called Jay in game two with his Sylvaneth. He brought a beardy 5 behemoth list.
A tree beardy,
yeah. Although you didn't summon the fifth behemoth,
I
did you?
I summoned the MVP, Kern Offontas.
Yeah. Oh, they won the game for you and denied me victory.
They did, yeah.
Actually, no, I take that back. My Achillean King lost me the game by failing to cause a single wound to them on turn 3 when he went mental with all his attacks.
I think we both had a duff turn 3, because I remember rolling my 6 hits and I rolled my wound rolls and they were all 1s and 2s.
Yeah. Well, I was fairly confident this guy with his, 30-odd attacks with all those bonus attacks on his profile could deal with 3 Kernoth Hunters, and didn't happen. The few wounds that you got through, you saved with your rerolls.
My rerolls, yep.
Well, went downhill from there, and I should have killed Alara. Yeah, I got some victory points.
Well, we figured, was it in the beginning of turn 4? We sort of figured out you can't come back from this now, Matt. I've got this. So we, Matt said, well, we'll just carry on playing, and I'll just see how many victory points we can get. And then, I mean, you almost tabled me in turn 5.
Yeah,
you had one turn where the eels just went mental.
But that's the thing with Sigmar, and it happened to who was it that? Carl and his Skaven, who did similar. Battered ogres, of course.
Yeah, the game.
The game.
And you think, you can easily table someone and not win the game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Wasn't it Carl's first two games, he practically destroyed the opponent's army and still lost?
Pretty much most of them. He came, on a VP scale of it, he was 1,300, 1,400 points in front of everybody else on victory points, but didn't convert his first two games into wins, sadly for him. Otherwise, he might have been a bit higher up the rankings.
Yeah.
Now, game 3 was against another scoundrel I'd played before, Andy Woods. Now, last time I played him at the Throne of Scores, I battered him with the dragon. So he couldn't let that stand and had to beat me. And it was a really, really fun game, which I was saying just before we recorded this section, came down to priority roll. Whoever got that was going to cause shenanigans.
Yeah. Andy took Flesh Eater Courts against you, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Which I said to him at the beginning, I was like, I didn't know you had a Flesh Eater Court army. He was like, doesn't. I don't. Yeah, it's somebody else's that just fancied using them.
But yeah, it was a bloody game. Luckily, I had the Eidolon of Mathlan, which gives Ivanith units +3 bravery. Otherwise, I think it would have been over with his screams from his various monsters.
Yeah.
Because bravery 6 isn't going to last long against all those.
Definitely not.
And yeah, his Terrorgeist killed my my Eidolon. My Achillean King actually did his job and battered the
Terrorgeist.
But by then, he'd got the middle objective, which I think was the... what were we playing? Shifting objective. So, yeah, he managed to just tip it over. It ended like 14-10 to Andy.
Yeah.
But it was really, really close. And I like close games. I think most of us had some close games over the event.
Some of us did have close games over the event, yeah.
And then fourth game was Ogres, Mikey, and his, again, gorgeous Ogre army. Not the most competitive army in the world at the minute, but again, looked really cool.
It was a big Ogre army.
It was a big Ogre
army, I was expecting 8 models in that army. Yeah. I went over it, had more models than my army.
We had 40 Noblers.
Noblers, yeah.
Which, I think he was a bit surprised that I just charged my whole army forward. Yeah. He wasn't quite expecting me to be quite as aggressive.
Yeah. But then I think I saw the combat of him hitting you with the line of grots, and then you just going, right, well, that's 10, 11 left, I think it was. Everything just smashed him.
And then I think I got the priority after that and just hit the ogres, and it was game over then. The turtle, I think, ate his tyrant, and then, things went downhill. And unfortunately for Mikey, but again, really fun game, and things were killed. The ogres managed to take down the Leviathan as well, so they've got a meal. They're happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Mikey wants a rematch against you once the ogre book comes out.
Yeah.
And they go up in the competitive scale.
They're as powerful as they've ever been. Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
And then the final game was against Jace and his Ironjaws. I'm a bit concerned here because I know how quick they are, having played you. And I'd deployed quite defensively, but he still managed to charge me turn one. I was like, okay, this isn't happening. But I don't know whether we're playing the objective where three places of power, where only a hero score. And I think he was so focused on just wiping out my army with this big block of orcs, he'd kind of left his characters exposed, and I'd know they're pretty quick. So I just kind of shot over his lines, killed his characters, and mid-game, it could have gone either way, because this Maw Crusher with the Ethereal Amulet, I wasn't getting rid of, but Turtle, again, man of the match, manages to... He attacked first with his big block of brutes. They get lots of attacks, don't they? And they left it with one wound, and the Leviador managed to cause five wounds with his bite attack, and then flailing around with fins and stuff took the last wound off it. And then, once that had dropped, pretty much all his characters were dead, so it was just a case of mopping up some orcs.
Mopping up some orcs.
Yeah, but it was a really fun game. That was probably the hardest fought one, because if he'd have killed that turtle, then that brute could have just killed everything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, really fun. So three wins, which I think is pretty good, considering I'd only had one game with the Ironeth prior to that. So yeah, pretty happy with that.
You won some dice as well.
I did win some dice, yeah, for letting... Jace had sent his guys forward before he'd buffed them. So I was like, yeah, I'll let you take that back. Dice, please.
I thought that was cool as well on the event. There were these like little mini missions.
Do you want to tell us about those, Craig?
So, we've been to loads of little events where they give you like a spot prize if you do something, if you're the first person to, you know, roll a double one for your charge and, you know, not having any re-rolls or anything like that. It's just a natural double one. So we ordered some... extra special black and silver purple sparkly unicorn dice, and we had two missions every round for you. Spot prizes, I should say. Things like fail a charge, retreat your character out of combat, get your general killed in the quickest time.
Both me and Andy went into that trying to get him killed and failed.
Absolutely, you know. The last round was give someone a take back, which is, I think, when Matt won. Just literally. Your opponent's made a mistake, and you go, "Oh, it's all right, just take it back." Again, emphasising that we want to run a friendly tournament.
Andy Woods, in my last game, I forgot to summon Alariel's Tree Lord. And Andy said, "Oh, sorry, okay, you can take it back. Have some dice, please." The body goes, "No, you can't take it back then."
Yeah, that does sound like Andy.
Didn't quite happen like that, but.
Cool. Well, I had an interesting tournament. So game one, I started. Well, you'd actually announced, you'd been teasing the game one lineup throughout the week.
I had, yeah.
And then on the Friday evening, you just dropped a bomb, didn't
dropped
you?
It dropped all. The whole, yeah, dropped the whole it lot. All, yeah.
And that's when I found my fate was probably sealed for the tournament by the fact that I got Andy Bryan as my first game. Now, Andy's a bit of a tournament veteran, isn't he?
Yeah,
and he's known for having very competitive
lists.
Very competitive lists. So Andy was taking his Skaven with a Grey Seer and Vermin Warp Seer. I went into it thinking, I'll be watching everybody else's games by turn two. But it didn't play out like that. Actually, my Stormcast did okay. The Dragon did quite a bit of shooting in the first and second turn before falling foul to the Giselles absolutely murdered him. I managed to get a heal off him in turn two, but then the Giselles took him right back down again, and his warps here mopped up in the turn two combat. But the Dragon did okay to that point. But I wasn't expecting his Grey Seer to murder my Evocators, who failed their charge.
Just going to keep track of that. So that's one failed charge.
I can't remember what there was over the whole tournament, but yeah, the UK's failed the charge, and when they did get into combat, the Grey Seer did a surprising number of wounds to them, and they just lose the potency once they lose two or three evocators.
Yeah they do.
So I did unfortunately lose, but it wasn't by the great big massive margin that I was expecting. So I kind of felt a bit confident then. I was like, this is alright, this is okay. Until Craig then announced that my second opponent was going to be Size Flesh Eater Courts. Flesh Eater Courts, this is like a flying Flesh Eater Courts on me. So they were Blister Skin with a whole ton of flayers. The first note I've got on here is tabled with an exclamation mark. that's how badly this went. So I think I made it to turn three. End of turn three. He had 19 points and I had 9. I don't even know how I got 9. His Terrorgeist charged me turn one and just murdered my dragon.
Yeah.
Dragon couldn't do anything. Yeah, the shooting attack that you mentioned that the flesh eater calls to, you know, the bravery one,
yeah,
that didn't really hurt me.
Your bravery's quite high,
yeah,
isn't it?
So that only did maybe 3 mortal wounds or something. It was everything else, though, all the other attacks and attacking twice and, yeah.
All those shenanigans.
It just battered me. And as soon as my dragon died, I had to waste my evocators to try and get some points back, because it was... focal points, so I didn't want him having all 4, you know, just churned up. So I sent my evocators over just against 10 ghouls, which they failed the charge on, just in case you want to note that down. It was a whole turn before they got to murder the ghouls, and then by that time my Stormcast line's been destroyed, and because his army was so fast, they just flew back and murdered my evocators. So it was really fun, and Sai's a really cool guy. Obviously knows what he's doing with flesh eater courts now.
Another awesome painter as well.
Very good painter.
That was game 2, loss 2. Definitely a major loss there. Moving on to game 3, the last game of the Saturday, I was playing against another Stormcast player. I was playing against Alex and his shooty Stormcast list.
Yeah.
Now again, Dave's thinking, I could do quite well against shooty Stormcast. You know, I'm not too worried. Until I realised that 6 Raptors put out 54 shots.
Yeah.
54 shots, yeah, if they've not moved.
Yeah.
That is absolutely crazy. It was shifting objectives. It was a close game up until towards the very end. It did keep swinging both ways.
Well, I was watching the last turn and I was like, oh wow, Dave's won this. That's amazing. Because I don't know if you saw it, but you could have won the game in the last turn if you hadn't have charged those guys. You'd shot the unit on the right-hand flank with a ballista. If you'd have shot the stuff on the other flank and just sent your invocator up, he'd have taken that objective and you'd been ahead by 1 point. But I think you'd missed that and shot the unit we were charging anyway, and you'd have easily killed it with the charging unit.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was so close, and I was like, I was pleased. I was like, at least Dave hasn't lost them all, and then did exactly the opposite of what I thought he was going to do.
What I do remember is my dragon did nothing in turn 1. I took the first turn. He did an absolute ton of damage to the dragon, but it lived, and I thought, it's fine. I've got 2 healing spells I can get off on it. But he double-turned me. So that was the end of the dragon, really, because there's no way I could heal him. He was going to be taken down, and he was. Again, the evocators didn't do an awful lot. They just got shot to pieces. It was a really cool list. It's definitely inspired me to add more shooter units to my Stormcast, the Hunters and...
was it quite like Vanguard Raptors heavy?
Vanguard. Yeah, it was, yeah. Well, he had 3 units of Hunters' his battle line.
Yep.
He had a massive unit of 18 Castigators.
Yeah, that put out a lot of shots.
Yeah,
well,
and they're all
yeah,
minus 1 as well.
Yeah.
In fact, they were minus 2. Because he kept using because you can choose to channel power or accuracy.
Yep.
And he was channeling power, so he was taking 2 off all my saves. I mean, you look at evocators and dragons and stuff, you know, you're putting out a lot of wounds.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was really close because it actually finished 14 all.
Yeah.
But I lost on victory points.
Yeah.
So but there you go. It was really cool, and you know, I've not really played Stormcast before, even though I've played Stormcast.
Yeah.
I've never actually really played Stormcast, so that was cool. Moving into day 2, still hoping for my first victory at some stage, I was playing Scott, who travelled all the way up from London.
Yeah, there were 3 guys that travelled up from London. There was Scott, Mark and Buddy, and they'd heard about our tournament on your lovely podcast.
Yeah. Of which they're probably listening to right now.
Yeah, so hi guys. Thanks for coming.
He had a really nice looking core army.
Yeah.
I really wanted to fight this army. It looked so good. There were 6 core graphs.
6 core graphs.
Yeah, this was one of the best painted army nominations.
Yeah, it definitely was.
It was.
Mainly because he had loads of juggernauts, and they were running through skull and water fields, and he'd done skulls being thrown up from the water on little acrylic rods that
UV resin. Yeah. He said you just pull that gently while putting the ultraviolet light on it, and then attached with tiny little pins.
Yeah,
skulls, so it looks so
good. And they look fantastic. Yeah, definitely deserved his painting nomination for it.
I thought it'd be a tough game, because obviously I know how hard Korn can hit. I've seen you play Korn before, Matt, and I think I played Korn at the doubles as well. But, you know, I went into it. My comet in turn one did amazing. Now, my comet got a lot of criticism by Matt and Jay saying, Dave, it's 100 points. You're wasting 100 points. It did okay in game one against Andy. It killed quite a lot of rats. Killed his warlock and did quite a bit of damage to his sails. Second game, I didn't even bother casting it because the flesh eater cords were just too fast.
So you were like 1900 points versus 2000.
Yeah. But in this game, in the first turn, it did about 17 or 18 mortal wounds.
Awesome.
It did really
How many
well.
Of them were to you?
No, not to me. Oh, okay. Zero to me. His back objective, because it was Border War, his back objective, I pretty much cleaned off just using the comet.
Wow.
In the last turn, my Lord Arcanum charged over there because I thought he might be able to take it on his own. Unfortunately, he didn't.
The comet killed him.
The comet didn't kill him, no. The comet had moved by that point because he dispelled it, so I'd brought it down closer to my line because by that time I had Corgraphs in my face. So I had to do something with that. I did kill all the Corgraphs by one, which I thought was a pretty big
achievement.
Good,
yeah.
This finished... now, I thought it was going okay, but it finished 27-7 to Khorne. So,
yeah.
That's nearly close, Dave.
And I did also
Comet's
get...
definitely working for you there.
I did get tabled as well.
I can turn to theme here.
So, yeah. I mean, it was a really fun game, and I'd already been tempted by Khorne, and that was just like the icing on the cake. I was like, yes, yeah. this is the future army for me. Lots of slaughter priests, lots of demons. Yeah. It'd be really cool. So yeah, that was game four, lost four. So it surely meant I was due a victory in the last round of the game. I was playing Mal and his Nighthorn. Now, I've got quite a bit of experience of playing Nighthorn, especially when we did the first Age of Sigmar doubles that I ever went to. Nighthorn was like
pretty much every army.
I'd seen what Grimghast Reapers could do.
Yeah.
I knew how much of a threat they were, and the Night of Shrouds and stuff. It was probably the funnest game, actually. Me and Mal had an absolute joy playing that game. My Evocators failed 5 charges.
wow.
Which was just incredible.
So does that include the 5-inch charge that they failed twice with a reroll?
That includes the 5-inch charge with the reroll.
That is an achievement.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They wanted to charge the Mongol and they were only 5 inches away and fluffed it. And then you spent a command point and they fluffed that as well. So
you definitely need a shooting army. Not
I definitely.
Yeah. And you're going Khorne.
And I'm going Khorne. Yeah. They get lots of bonuses to charging.
You're still
which is something my Stormcast could do with.
Maybe you need to do Wood Elves and I'll do Khorne.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a really fun game. It finished 13-10 to Mal, obviously. But it was really good. I really enjoyed it. It was my favourite game of the weekend. And I'm not going to lie, that's where my favourite game vote went. But, yeah, it wasn't to be in the end. So that was game 5, lost 5. I think I was the only one to lose every single game at the tournament.
Just check now. I was just looking at them now. Yes, you
say
were.
That like it's a proud achievement, though, Dave.
You got the wooden spoon.
Well, yeah, I did win the wooden spoon, which is I'm proudly displaying on our Twitter feed. If you want to head over to at Screws and Brews, you'll be able to see me looking proud of mine. I won a prize. I mean, it's still a prize.
Yeah. There's a picture of you on Twitter, like smashing up your vicators with a wooden spoon.
It was funny because towards the end of that game, when I had a feeling I was going to lose, the only other guy who was on no wins was just playing behind me.
Yeah.
And I kind of had an eye like, if I'm going to lose, I'd rather just come bottom and win the wooden spoon. How's he getting on? Because, you know, if he's doing worse than me.
Well, I jokingly said you'd ruin your chances by getting a minor loss in game 3.
Game 3, when we drew on objective points. I did come bottom. So surely the next tournament, the only way is up, right?
That's absolutely,
right.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So still fun, anyway. That's the most important thing. So, Jay, do you want to talk us through your games?
Yeah, sure. So I took my Sylvaneth to this tournament. It's the first time I've used a Sylvaneth at 2,000 points with the new book. And it was like a late, sort of last minute decision. I thought I'm just going to go Bearmoth after talking to Matt, go Bearmoth heavy. So I had an Alariel, a Durfu, a Treelord, a Treelord Ancient, a Branch Wraith, and then 20 Drys and 2 units of 5 Tree Revenants, which I love, for my battle line. And then in 4 of the 5 games, I used Alariel to summon another Treelord in.
Because, you know, why not?
Yeah,
why not, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So I had all these tree lords walking around the place. I used the Gnarl Root Glade, which is the caster sort of glade, where they're quite good at casting spells. They've got some good artifacts for that. They've got some good traits that they can proc from casting spells. And they get a good reroll one bubble being around your casters.
I mean, that came into effect during our game quite a bit.
It did, yeah. And it's, you know, with three casters in the army, and two of them are quite resilient, it was quite easy to keep that buff going. So my first game was against Kyle, and he was using a death army. Was it Sacrosanct?
Legion of Sacrament.
Sacrament.
Led by two vamps on dragons.
On zombies, yeah. That was it. Yeah, zombie dragons, yeah. So that was a really good game. I won that one. In the end, I think it was my Tree Lord stomping, making Graveguard strike last, which allowed me to clear the Graveguards, and then I could... so that was okay. That was the biggest threat, really. The second game was against Matt and his IDNF, which we've already talked about. So in that game, that's the game where I decided to summon Kernoth Hunters instead of the Tree Lord, because I thought, well,
I'd have had the Tree Lord.
You would have battered the Tree Lord, yeah. And to be fair, I mean, even then, I did underestimate how much damage your army could do, because I thought, oh, the Kernoth Hunters might be okay. The Kernoth Hunters were lucky, because in turn four, the amount of damage you put out with those eels that were doing double damage.
Minus two rend, two damage when they charge. Yeah,
and they just did a lot of damage. But that was a really close game. I think it was turn four when we could see who'd won that one. My third game, this was solid. I didn't see any way into this game. I was playing Night's Horn, and it was shifting objectives, which is my least favourite. I hate the missions where the objectives are in the middle of the board in a line.
Well, you're quite agile and able to jump around the board, yeah. So when they're just sat in the middle, it kind of takes away that advantage of yours.
That's exactly it, yeah. I didn't even kill a single unit.
Oh, no.
Even with the stomps, Alariel, I mean, I took a gamble on this one. I charged Alariel right up to finish off his Grimghast Reapers, big unit of Grimghast Reapers, and Alariel did a lot of damage to them. But I was banking on double turn so that I could finish them off quickly before they attacked. I didn't get it, and they just killed Alariel. And then I just couldn't get into the game. I didn't really have... All I had was my Tree Lords, and they're quite good. I really like the stomps, but their damage is a bit random. And against Horde, you want those D6s to be 5s and 6s, and they just weren't 5s and 6s.
Yeah.
So I struggled in that game. I really struggled in that game. And I don't know what I could have done differently to try and win that one.
Do you think every army has that one army that it just isn't, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I think partly that, and I also think it's partly experience. So I knew I had to try and take his characters out, because they were the ones that were really buffing all of these units, but I just couldn't get to the characters, and I couldn't see an opportunity to get to the characters. I mean, if I'd got that double turn for L'Oreal, she was in a prime position to start targeting characters in his back line, but it didn't go that way, so... the game was a learning experience, put it that way.
Yeah.
So that was my first loss at the end of day one. Day two, I was playing a chap called Lee with his Daughters of Cain.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what this mission was now. This was the one where you...
Border War, I think it was.
The objective in enemy territory is worth 4 points, yeah.
Yeah, Border War.
So I've never played Daughters of Cain before. Well, I've had one game of Daughters of Cain really early on in Age of Sigmar, but this was a first proper game against Daughters of Cain. And... I lost this game, but I really, really enjoyed this game. I really, really felt like I'd proper give him a fight. And it was very close all the way through, although the victory points don't really tell that story. But I really, really felt like I'd given everything in this game. Straight from deployment, he deployed his Witch Elves quite far back on the table. And I could see, I came over to you, Matt, and I said, there's a chance here I could just snatch another 4 points right in turn one. So turn one, I got first turn. I sent my Tree Revenants to take his own objective and got 4 points. I think I got every objective in the first battle. So for the first three battle rounds, I was actually winning on objectives. And then the Daughters of Cain hit me. So I lost my left flank. He had a unit of 30 Witch Elves coming down, and he had these tokens for all of his buffs, and he had about 8 tokens on these Witch Elves.
About right.
I teleported a Tree Lord over that side of the battlefield to back up the 20 Dryads I had in a Wild Ward, thinking, well, I know how resilient 20 Dryads are in a Wild Ward. 80 dice coming my way, re-rolling everything again. Sixes did double damage, minus, I don't know what it was, they were gone. The Tree Lord was gone. Unfortunately, he didn't get his stomp off. But even if he had got his stomp off, I don't think it would have made much difference. So I thought, okay, well, I've lost that objective. I can still compete on this side of the board. So Alario went in against this unit of 30 elves,
and Alariel hits hordes hard. Yeah. So in the new rules, she's been buffed. She gets plus one to hit against units with five or more models with the Beetle. So she can do like 25 damage on the charge with the Beetle. So I did 15 damage, kill 20 damage. I killed 20 elves from this big block of 30. And then the 10 remaining elves rolled 40 attacks against Alariel. Rerolling hits, rerolling wounds. Alariel was dead. Yeah. Then Durfu followed, he was dead. And then I was running out of units rapidly. So that lead I built up at the beginning of the game slowly deteriorated as the Witch Elves just murdered me.
Yeah, they're...
They're good at that, aren't they?
They're good at that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's not a lot you can do. I think even the most... Even my Dwarf Ironbreakers would struggle against 80 dice with rerolls of everything coming your way.
They should be called the Daughters of Reroll, shouldn't they?
Daughters of Reroll, yeah. I mean, I tried to go for the characters at the back. I got quite a lot of damage down on the Cauldron. I nearly killed one of the Hags. But you only get one shot at it because it's hard to get those to hags as well. Yeah. You only get one shot at it, and I got him down to one wound on one of his hags, and then all the return attacks came back and just killed me. I love that game though. It was a really, really good game compared to the previous game against Nighthawk, where I thought I didn't even have a chance. That game I really, really enjoyed. So that was two losses, then two wins. I really wanted a third win. We had dinner at that point, and I remember sitting around the table with you guys, and I said, you know what, I'm exhausted after that game against Daughters of Cain. I put everything into that game. I'll just like an easy game. And Dave says, who would you like to play? And Jay says, to be fair, I play anyone apart from Flesh Eater Courts. And then it turned out I was playing Flesh Eater Courts last game against Andy Woods. And this was another great game as well. So I've never played... Oh, no, I tell a lie. We have played Flesh Eater Courts and we got battered in turn two.
Yeah, I think you've kind of deleted that from your memory. That was it, yeah. Honest Wargamer, Flesh Eater Courts, Dark Times.
Yeah.
But this was good. I did all right. The stomps worked for me. Tree Lords are brilliant. I love Tree Lords. It's so cool. So there was a bit of a scuffle in the middle of the board. The Terror Guys came in, swallowed Alariel. That's a bit of a pain. If only Durfu wasn't there. Durfu saved the day and... killed the Terror Geist. And then after that point then, I was just tanking all the damage he was doing to me. The Gnaw Root was healing it back up again. And there was a really, really cool bit towards the end of the game where... So this is a game where only heroes can... and leaders can... Is it just heroes?
Yeah, heroes can take
objectives. So he had his one of his Arch-Regent, is it, or something? Or Ghoul King or something? On the point on my left. And I had my... I had Durfu in the middle holding my middle point and he could not get rid of Durfu. And then on the right hand side I had my Tree Lord Ancient and my Branch Wraith. And we were playing in the realm of Ulgu, I think. And there's a couple of cool spells in the Realm of Shadow. I was able to use the spells to teleport the Tree Lord Ancient across to 9 inches away from his Ghoul King on the other side. Great. And then there's another spell you can cast, which the Tree Lord Ancient cast, that makes the enemy character walk 4 inches towards you. So I dragged him 4 inches towards me, knocking him off the objective. And then my Tree Lord Ancient charged in, stomped him, killed him, got the point.
Love
it. Maybe that's how I should run my evocators. Yeah. Pulled the enemy towards me. Instead of me charging them, bring them to me. That's where I went wrong.
Yeah.
So I actually tabled the Flesh Eater Courts in that game and won that game. So 3 wins, 2 losses, and I had a great time. Really, really good. All the guys I played against were really, really friendly, and it was good because you could talk to them about things you could have done differently, little tips they were giving you. Oh, next you should have done that, you know, in turn two this is what you should have probably done. So it was a really, really good learning experience to sort of improve your game. I mean, this was the first time I'd really used Sylvaneth in this sort of environment as well. But yeah, all the worries I had about going to that tournament and it being a really cutthroat, ruthless, you know, high pressure event, no way, it wasn't. It was really, really enjoyable.
So what was your experience of kind of like running the event then, Craig?
I love it. I was spare player on day one because we had someone who couldn't attend on the Sunday but really wanted to come and sort of meet everybody and play in his first tournament. So yeah, I spare played. So I was a bit of a whipping boy for the first day. But running it, I really enjoy it. Maybe more so than playing. I don't know. Jury's still out on that one, but yeah, I loved it. We've got it all set up on a website called Tabletop TO. We ran it through that.
I was really impressed with that.
Yeah.
This was like the little website where you could put your results in. You could see where all the standings were.
Yeah. Literally, like let's say Matt and Dave are playing. They can both submit their results, but you can't put false results in because when Dave's put them in, it won't authorize it until Matt's also put it in and they match up. So there's no you know, lying to the tournament organisers. Oh yeah, I tabled him and I won, when actually it was the other way around. Yeah, it's really good. And then, like, at the end of the event, it organises the results by strength of schedule or victory points or, you know, whatever you want it to score it by. It's absolutely brilliant.
I thought the scoring was good as well, because it adds more gradients to, rather than just victory points. Like you say, if you've beaten someone who's beaten another strong army, you get a higher score.
Yeah, and that's what strength of schedule is, which is, I think, is a better way of scoring it. I'm not overly critical of people's events. They can run it how they want, but I think that just makes more sense to me. Is if you beat the person that comes third, I think you should get more.
You deserve a bit of credit for that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it all went off without a hitch. We organised food for everybody on both days. We went out for a meal on the Saturday night, a bit more social aspect to it. I was doing drinks runs on the Sunday for everybody. If they wanted drinks from the bar, save you stopping your games. Yeah, loved it. Really good.
It was a really, really good event, and looking forward to the next 2 days, which I'm sure you're going to do at some point soon.
Absolutely, yeah. We've already been looking at dates, so watch this space.
I need to have a brand new competitive Age of Sigmar on me, so if you just want to give me a bit of a heads up, I can set my benchmark. That's when I need all my Bloodthirsters in the world ready for that tournament.
Yeah.
But you have got a new tournament scheduled.
We do, yeah. We've got a one-day 40k event on the 8th of September. It's our first 40k event. We've never run one before. I've not really played a lot of 40k. I'm a fantasy man by heart, but I do own a 40k army, so I will be playing. I might be playing and running it at the same time, so I might be the spare player again. We've been building scenery for it, which was what I was hinting at earlier. We've brought loads and loads from our club funds, and we've been dual purposing and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, so we're looking forward to running that. It's going to be 3 games at 1250 points, so not too big, not too small, we're looking forward to it. The tickets are on sale now, so we've already sold a few.
How do people get in touch with you if they're interested in getting tickets?
So we've got a club website, not club website, I'm lying to you, a club email address, which is PSUnicorns, sorry, can't remember my own email address, PSUnicorns@hotmail.com, and it is basically run by about 3 of us. We've all got access to it, so if you want any information, drop us a line and we'll tell you whatever you want to know.
We will include links in the text for this podcast, and we will put a post up on the website in the coming days as well.
Yeah, and if you're interested, if you want to just, you know, tweet us, we'll point you in the right direction to Craig get you sorted. £15 for 1 day, including food.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got food included. If you need any allergies, you know, all that kind of stuff, just let me know and I'll get it all sorted for you.
And if you are in the crew area, or, you know, don't mind travelling down, you do kind of fairly regular club nights as well.
Yeah, we do one every month. Depending on what I'm working, it's usually a Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday night at the Shavington Social Club, and we just charge £3 to come along and play. If you want to come and say hi to people and don't want a game, we don't charge you. I don't believe in that. And our next club night is the 13th of August, coming up quite quickly, and when we're booked in, we know what the next few are going to be.
Awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. I think we're all planning on going to the 40k event, aren't we?
Yeah,
I don't think I'm on holiday.
I'm definitely going. And like you say, I mean, it's £15 a ticket, but like, it was a very well-run tournament. I thought there wasn't much downtime between games. You knew which table you were on, who you were playing. I thought the scenery looked great.
Yeah,
because you see some horror stories from some tournaments where you turn up and it's just polystyrene blocks on it.
All the exact same positioning.
I thought all the scenery was brilliant, very well painted. The board looked fantastic. I think everyone made an effort. All the armies were well painted.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think you turn up at a tournament and people have just got grey armies there. So I think it's important.
Well, our aim has been, this was our 5th event. So the first 4 we ran, we were really not fussed about your painting, because we wanted to more drive the hobby in our area. So we were absolutely fine when you turned up with grey plastic, you know, proxy models, anything you wanted. And now we've got to a stage where most of the people that come have got painted armies. We now put it in the pack that, you know, for Age of Sigmar at least, we'd like it painted. For the 40k one that we're running, it's just undercoated. So if you've got it and you want to come along and you're worried about your painting, literally all you need to do is spray it a primer colour. That's all we want.
And you know, if you've not been in a tournament before, you haven't been playing 40k very long, all the guys are really friendly.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Like I say, I've played about 15 games of 40k in about 10 years. So I really don't know what I'm doing. But everyone's approachable. I think, you know, we might get a couple of guys from the local area that have played a bit more and might know a bit more what they're doing. Hopefully they can teach us whilst winning the event in a nice way. But yeah, you know, everyone's really nice, friendly, not too horrible.
Awesome. I'm torn between taking my filthy GNC of the Court list and trying to win it, or my pretty Deathcore Krieg, rolling some dice and hopefully going for best painted.
That's why I'm trying. I think I'm going to go for a best painted. That's what I'm aiming for. Yeah. Nomination for best painted.
Good. And I'm just going to take a load of Tyranids and just eat things. I think that's my plan.
Tyranids and Comets.
Tyranids and Comets, yeah.
Bioverse, throw in there.
Excellent. I think that rounds up this segment. So we have not finished there, though, because we do have our top three coming up next. It is time for our most popular segment from our podcast, and that is our weekly top three. This week's top three focuses on places we'd like to go on holiday in either the Warhammer, any of the Warhammer universes, including Lord of the Rings as well.
Yeah.
So I've changed my top three, bearing that in mind, because there was one that was on the cusp, and I was like, "Oh well, if we're going Lord of the Rings, then boom, let's do it." So we will be reading out the community top three picks at the end of the podcast. However, let's do ours first. Matt, do you want to start us with your third choice?
So my third choice is going to watch a Blood Bowl match. I think that'd be great. There'd be good food.
The West Ham burgers.
Exactly, yeah. If you go to a halfling match, you know there's going to be some good snacks to have. Yeah. You see some brutal fatalities on the pitch.
You might get time. Brutally battered as well.
You might be, Audience participation is a big part of Blood Bowl.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, crowd stampedes, rogue trolls wandering around. Yeah, I think...
cheerleaders, those troll cheerleaders.
Yeah, don't want to mess with them. So yeah, I think watching a Blood Bowl game would be awesome fun.
Excellent. My third choice is a bit of a city break. So I would like to spend a weekend at Minas Tirith.
Right, okay.
Because I think the architecture's stunning. I mean, that view
off the
fields of Pelennor. Preferably not full of orcs.
I was going to say, before the siege.
Obviously, I bet it was all churned up afterwards. But it wasn't as pretty. I'm sure there's some great shops to be had in Minas Tirith. Like I say, the view from the top as well, and yeah, I think it'd be a really cool place to visit and check out, and yeah,
awesome, sounds good.
Jay, what's your third choice?
My third choice is a very mysterious and elusive destination. Not many people have been there, so that's one of the draws, and it is the Black Library, the Eldor craft world that I think resides in the Webway.
It does indeed.
Possibly. I think one human may have been there. Inquisitor... can't think of his name. Critman, not Critman. There's one Inquisitor that's quite friendly with the Elder. He's been there, I believe. So I think actually any non-authorised guest that steps foot there, if they do make the way there past all the Black Library's guardians, is just killed. Apparently the guardians of the Black Library are the sort of shadowy figures that have been described as the most deadliest Eldar warriors ever. There's also apparently a few books there. Everything the Eldar.
I'd like to think that a place called the Black Library is going to have a few books.
I kind of want a Black Library card.
Yeah.
The Black Library is where the Eldar store all their known information about the Chaos Gods and Chaos as a whole. And I think that might be quite useful. Matt's quite a big Chaos player. Dave is siding with Khorne nowadays, so I might learn a few things about how to face you guys on the battlefield.
That's
all inclusive. That's really cool. Black Library.
All inclusive,
man.
They might not let me out again, but
you might not run out of books to read, though.
No, that's it.
You'll be all right.
Yeah, good thing. Take my Kindle.
Craig, what's your third choice?
I think mine would be a throwback to 8th edition, and it would be Tzeentch's Crystal Palace.
Ooh.
I think that would be something to behold. With all
you'd probably go mad.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Yeah. I think I'm already mad though, so can't really go much madder. But yeah, I'd love to see that. See some Zinchian demons and see what Zinch is up to and see what he gets to see.
Yeah.
Would you see what he got? Or would you see what he wants you to see?
Wheels within wheels.
There you go. Excellent. We're round to our second choices. Matt, do you want to tell us yours?
Well, when I'm picking a holiday destination, the main kind of point that you're looking at is there good food, is there good drink, and is it comfy? Well, there's clearly one choice for this, and it's the Shire.
Yeah.
You know, a weekend away at the Shire, you know you're going to have a great time. All the food you could possibly want, friendly people, local tavern selling, you know, finest ale produced on site.
Plus, yeah. I don't think it ever rains in the Shire.
It's always nice in the Shire.
Apart
from when Sharky and crew kind of trash the place, but... Yeah. Apart from that...
There's not been a dragon there for how many years?
Oh, ages, centuries. So, yeah, I think the Shire would be an awesome place to go and visit for a little while.
Yeah. If you were over the sort of 5'7", you might struggle with those hobbit holes.
Oh, well, Craig would be like a giant in the Shire.
Awesome. My second choice is a realm in the universe of Age of Sigmar, and that's because I can always envision it being quite lush with life of various forms and quite an attractive, but probably a very dangerous place to hang out, but that is the realm of Gur, the realm of beasts. Yeah, of course it's full of beasts, hence the name, but it was between this and Lustria, which is a similar kind of a very sort of a nice sort of trekking, like an expedition kind of holiday.
Yeah.
You know, almost like a safari.
With dinosaurs and monsters and stuff.
With dinosaurs and colossal squigs and, yeah. I think that'd be really cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's my second choice. More of a, I've gone from a city break to like a safari.
Slash Stranglethorn Vale.
with the realm of Gur. Your second choice, Jay?
Well, it's interesting, Dave, because you mentioned Lustria there. And Lustria was on my list of destinations to visit, but the natives put me off and all the blowpipes and whatnot. So I thought, okay, well, where else can we go? And I thought, Athelloran. The old forest in the old world. Wood elves know how to party. Probably out of all the elves, they know how to party best because they've got a bit of both in them. Also, you know, sometimes the worst thing about holidays is that they're over too quickly. And yet, if you go to Athelloran, time stays still. You know, you could be in there for hundreds of years and then you reappear and, you know, decades have gone days have gone.
You could also spend 20 years wandering through the glades that they keep shifting to keep you out.
Yeah, well, there is that. But, I mean, obviously, I'd go with a proper tour guide. Yeah, one of the authorised packages.
What was the name of the character from the Wood Elves? Just befriend him. Can't think of his name.
Durfu was a Wood Elf. He was a tree spirit, wasn't he?
Before
he went mad. Yeah, I'd go out with Durfu. You'd turn around
after.
Go drinking with Durfu in Athelloran.
Ace, your second choice, Craig?
Mine is going to be a 40k one. My only 40k army that I have is my Drukhari, and I'd love to go and see the home of the Drukhari and see their gladiatorial pits. And hopefully not from inside the pit. I think I'd like to be watching it from the outside.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to be fighting in
there. As holidays go, that's quite a violent one.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, when in Rome, that's what they say. You know, you've got to experience the local culture, I suppose. I think that'd be an interesting one.
Could you imagine the cuisine?
I'd probably take a packed lunch. Wouldn't want to be eating my fellow tour guide.
It reminds me of that episode of The Idiot Abroad where he just takes Monster Munch with him because he just takes loads of bags of Monster Munch.
I can see that. Yeah.
It's Comera, isn't it?
Comera, that was it. I couldn't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're already round to our top choices.
Well, you mentioned one realm, but why not go to a location where you can see all of the realms?
Ah.
You know, being able to pop from realm to realm, and it's definitely super safe. This is the 8 Points and the Varenspire.
not covered in chaos beings.
No, no. Archeon's barely there. He's always out doing stuff, so you're probably not going
to
get
killed. He's got a bad reputation, but you need to go and see it for yourself.
If anything, he's the good guy because he was technically fighting chaos at the end of the world. Some would say. Yes, there might be various warbands who are all gathering together through the 8 points, but you know, you can just hop into a realm gate, see a different side, it'd be awesome. As long as you don't get killed or fall to chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happens to most people that go to the Alpons?
Yeah, they get killed or they fall to chaos. Ah. But it'll be fine.
Just don't mention it to your insurance company.
Yeah, you wouldn't get insurance.
You would never get insurance.
Buy it.
Mortal Realms insurance.
My top choice is another city break.
I do like
the city breaks. It's featured in quite a few video games, which I think is what I'd like to, you know, from my experience in wandering around this place in video games, I think it'd be a really cool place to visit in person. And that's what it doesn't exist anymore. Not that it exists anyway, but Altdorf.
Oh, yeah.
The place where they park boats on roofs.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to go to a city and see that?
Yeah.
Reminds me of Booty Bay a little bit, saying that of boats on roofs. But yeah, I'd like to go say hello to Carl Franz.
You get a job as a rat catcher.
Yeah, they
have big rats there.
They have pretty massive rats.
Have they got the school of magic there? The university. Yeah.
So there's plenty to see and do.
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
It's like a dark, greasy Hogwarts.
Quite a few observatories. Warhammer Online. That's what it was all about, wasn't it? Wandering around Altdorf. So
yeah,
that's my top choice. What's yours, Jay?
So, my top choice, and it's going back to the old world again, you can get there by boat, and it is the Shrine of Azurian.
Azurian. Yeah.
The Elvish god. Mm. It's quite a nice place. I mean, I like going to see, like, castles and ancient ruins and things like that, so this has that appeal to it. Also, inside the Shrine of Azurian, that place, there is a room, a bit like the Sistine Chapel, the Chamber of Days. It's said on the walls of the Chamber of Days is written everything that has happened, that is happening, and will ever happen. So the Phoenix Guard, who sort of like, they're like the Swiss Guard from the Vatican, really. They sort of patrol this area, keep it safe. They go into this room and they read this wall and then they're swore to silence afterwards, so they never utter a word again about what will happen, what has happened and what is happening. I think on that wall might be some information about what Games Workshop has got planned for the rest of this year. The next battle tome is, And I think as well as a holiday, I could like take Ames with us, you know, and then say, oh, go to the bar and get a drink and I'll sneak in there and see what's coming out. That's the plan.
And try not to get stabbed by Felix Gard on the way out.
Yeah. And I think you have to walk through some fire as well, but I'll, you know, there must be a tourist entrance, you know, that's just for the locals.
Yeah,
I don't want to do any of that stuff. Hopefully there's no Elvish Civil War going on when you go there.
Yeah, which was dampening on things. Yeah. Wasn't there a big like Chaos Rift there that they were holding back as well?
I think check with the tour operator first.
Yeah, definitely.
There's definitely a right time to go and a wrong time to go.
Cool. Unlike the 8 peaks where the 8 points where they're just doing
bad time all the time, yeah.
Craig, do you want to finish off our top three with your top choice?
Well, I am a lifelong devotee for my army and I would love to go and visit the home of the Daughters of Cain and see, hopefully, without getting stabbed.
That's definitely
sacrificed.
A really safe place to go.
Yeah, 100% safe. Just make sure that Marathi's not around when you go, surely. Yeah. Dress as a snake. I mean, I could get a good onesie from somewhere. I could blend in as a snake, I think.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know the difference.
Probably not a safe place to go for a swim.
Yeah, maybe not. No.
Isn't there a kind of dormant chaos god shackled just to the edge of that realm as well?
Well, yeah, but, you know, just you want to go to the 8 points.
Oh, yeah, this is true.
Live life while you're young, you know?
It's a bit shadowy there, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But take a good talk to you. You're right. Yeah.
As an honourable mention, none of us have mentioned the greatest place to get a suntan.
What is that?
That's the realm of Akish. I can never pronounce the realm.
Akish.
I mean, imagine the tan you get from that place.
Yeah, that would be.
It'd be incredible.
Need some good aircon there, I think.
Yeah, you would definitely get a good aircon. But yeah, I think I'd be a nice place if you like your sun
and barbecues
and barbecues.
Yeah, yeah, no, get
definitely magma drafts
and magma drafts. Yeah,
barbecue magma draft. Mm-hmm.
Any honourable mentions, folks?
No,
no, none jumping to mind.
I think I'd like to visit the Lonely Mountain.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be. I grew up with The Hobbit, you know. It completely would be my number four on the list, definitely.
I've just remembered one that'd be awesome to go to, the Imperial Palace.
That would be
on Terror. Yeah, yeah.
It's very crowded nowadays, though.
Yeah, it's quite crowded.
Yeah.
Bit like London, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bit like London.
Yeah. Minus the big statues of Primarchs.
Yeah.
They've just got a big Primarch.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. That rounds up our top three. We do have one. Oh, before we move on, do we know what next week's top three is?
We do indeed. So, with the news in the financials about Warhammer TV shows and movies, we want to know your top three ideas for a Warhammer TV show.
I've got an ace one. This guy, yeah, he goes to these tournaments, he takes this comet, right? And all his mates are telling him how bad the comet is, and then right at the end of the film, he summons this comet and it saves the world.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I think I've got somebody in mind who could play the leading role. awesome. So that's next week's top three. Let's have the community top three and then we'll wrap up this podcast. Matt, your data slate is at the ready. Do you want to read out this week's community top three choices?
Okay, well, Andy Bryan says a cruise on Abaddon's Planet Killer, anywhere with Gotrek and Felix, and a Grand Tour of Skaven Blight on a Doom Wheel.
That's pretty cool.
On a Doom Wheel, yeah.
David Shepherd, I'd like to see the Blood Bowl. He'd like to wander around Azir, a big fan of the architecture. And he'd be up for a stag do on Fulgrim's Pleasure Planet. I think if Chaos's economy could be developed through tourism, there'd be less warlike. Fair enough. Speaking of which, Fabius Fulgrim says, a safari tour of Catachan. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Oh, Catachan would be nice to go and visit.
A sightseeing tour of Prospero. If you like your pyramids and ruins and stuff, that'd be good. And again, a stag do on Fulgrim's Pleasure Planet.
Mm.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, definitely.
Mike Lodes says, it'd have to be Blood Bowl. I'd get tickets for every game. An adventure on a Blackstone Fortress. Probably a little dangerous again.
Yeah.
And Shadespire. Constant battles without the fear of death. Mm. Yeah. Narrative Wargamer says, Altdorf during the Blood Bowl Championships. Kemri, pre-Rise of Nagash. And Orbital Plates on pre-Heresy Terror. Okay. Mm. Vincent Notley says the reliquary of Grand Castellan Dinos Agamemnis before Khalgar got its filthy thieving mitts on it.
That's a bit of a difficult sentence to read out, isn't it? Is. Glad you're reading this.
Armageddon and the corpse starch factories. Jonathan Burkett says Fenris for the white sports, Catachan for the jungle safaris, and Titan for the inviting and welcoming local population. And Roebuck says an Eldari craft world, one of the Eldari core worlds, before the whole descent of Morrel's hullabaloo, and the living city in Guran. Mm,
nice.
Yeah, some really good picks. Blood Bowl was a hot favourite there. Yeah.
As is Fulgrim's pleasure.
Yes.
We'd all like to go and see
it. Go watch again, Blood Bowl, and then head over to Fulgrim's.
Yeah.
Excellent. So if you'd like to get your top threes in early, you can do so by tweeting to us at Sprues and Brews. Alternatively, you can head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. Do also check out our YouTube channel, which is /Sprues Brews, isn't it? I always forget that one. And we do also have an Instagram account. I will be linking on spruesandbrews.com, I'll be relinking Matt's Vorgraph list versus Craig's Daughters of Cain. Probably one of the shortest battle reports on the internet. So if you've got a spare 5 minutes, you might want to check that out. So
we'll also put the tournament pack up for the 40k event as well.
We will indeed. So tickets, as Craig mentioned, are available right now.
Right now, right this second, yeah.
So if you're anywhere near Crewe, or even if you're not near Crewe,
come on down for the weekend.
Come on down anyway. It should be fun. So yes, I think that wraps up this week. Thanks to Craig for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
you're very welcome. And we'll be back again next week with another fun podcast.
Probably a Warcry themed episode, I think
it will be. and we'll potentially have quite a few reveals from this week as well.
Yeah, exciting times.
Until then, we'll speak to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.